The smartest people collaborate. Listen, sometimes we have a camp and I'm recording and the guys write something. When I start singing it, the guys goes, "You're singing it too much."
Wait, what does that mean?
Exactly. Sing it.
Talk, sing it.
Yeah. I'll do something like, "Baby, this your booty, now come find." Baby, like, no. It's too sweet. Now you have to go, "Baby, this your booty, now confirm. Let me see you whine it to the ground."
That's completely different sound.
But do they feel like that's what Nigerians understand? Or what is it?
That's Yaya's story isn't just about music. It's about loss, betrayal, and rebirth. From losing his entire family in the same year, to winning Project Fame, to topping the charts, losing it all, and rebuilding from nothing. Yaya has lived every season of the Afrobeat story.
I'll tell you, one of the reasons why I went through my addiction phase was because I was running away from spending time with those thoughts. Yeah, you lose a dad, you lose a mom, you lose a brother, but losing three in the space of 2 years, you know, I was angry at God. I was angry at the world. I was angry at myself for even being born to people who I didn't see anymore. I was just mad at the world. When that happens, the only thing that saves you is...
Have you ever considered therapy?
On this episode of the Afropolitan Podcast, we sit with Inyanya Onoyom Mbuk to talk about healing, legacy, and what it truly means to come back home to yourself.
So in 2013, the endorsements were crazy, right?
Yeah.
If you could redesign your 2013-2015 cash flow as 2025 Inyanya, how would you allocate living, liquidity, long-term, and legacy?
We see the tweets, and every single day what we see is, "We love Afropolitan. This podcast is underrated. This is the best podcast ever." But the problem is 82% of you are not subscribers, but I know you guys are watching. So I need you to click the subscribe button so you can join the Afropolitan family. Thank you.
Yaya, welcome.
Good? Thank you so much, brother. Good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, we have viewers from everywhere. They could be taking a walk. They could be driving. Okay. They could just be even chilling at home.
All right.
What is the one thing you want our listeners to learn about the process of reinvention?
Just being original. Just being yourself, being real, being original.
And authentic, basically.
Authentic, yeah. That's it.
You know, I saw a video the other day of, you know, the new album just came out.
Yeah.
Forrester, and, you know, you were...
Forrester's son. Yeah.
And you were basically, like, letting people be aware of it on the Ikoyi Bridge, right?
Yes.
What inspired that decision-making, by the way?
That was Ubi's idea. Shout out, give him his flowers for that. That was Ubi's idea, you know, because we spend a lot of money promoting the songs and projects, and this album is very special to me and to us. So Obi was like, we have to do something that we've not done in a long time, you know, or we've not done at all, because this is a good project and people must listen to it. People must hear it. Spending money on influencers is not easy these days. You know, the listings for influencers charging almost 5 million.
Mm. Per post.
3 million to 10 million. I mean, it's crazy. So you want to promote your stuff, and I want you to promote your stuff.
Let's take it back a little bit. Okay. You and I first connected on the Yaya tour in the U.S. Right? What was that tour like for you? Like, what was the experience like?
Yeah.
Walk us back to 2013 Yaya U.S. tour.
Oh, man, it was overwhelming. I mean, in a good way. And I can say that I was not prepared for it, but I enjoyed it, if it makes sense. You know, it just happened. You know, you're going to make it, you're going to be famous, you can feel it, but then you don't know how big it's going to be. So, you know, all of that was new and exciting for me. Mm. Yeah.
And walk us through, you know, the tour, like even the song selection, the people that were part of the tour, like walk us through like the different details of the story.
Okay, so shout out to Big A. Big A, obviously.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, he was my host, a great guy, great promoter, great host. The songs we had you know, dropped the project, the Desire album. The songs were doing well. Kukere, Your Waist, Flavor, Sexy Mama featuring Wiz, Jombolo featuring Flavor. So, you know, this, people loved the album, the project. So it was only fair for us to get on the road and you know, just like perform to the fans. And American fans, they're amazing because they don't hold back when they see their favorite celebrities. They wild out. And I love them for that.
And do you see a difference between American and Nigerian fans? Like, what do you think is the difference? Like, when you perform in America, like, be honest, because we have all types of people that watch this podcast.
Of course, of course. So, I love my Nigerian fans, man. I'm not going to lie to you, but you know, in Nigeria, stees is very, very... my Nigerian fans don't play with their stees, right? Yeah. So, you're going to run into somebody who loves you so much, and they're going to wait to see if you are nice enough for them to approach you. And then you can't blame them too, because most times they've tried reaching out to a celeb or two who's been rude to them. So, you know, but now I understand them. So most times I see my Nigerian fans and I literally know that, okay, this person can't wait to take a picture, but then Steez is activated. But the American fans, you know, they don't hold back. They see you in the mall. They see you anywhere they see you in America. They stop their cars on the road. They want to take a picture. So that's the difference, you know.
So before, obviously, you became Iyanya, right? Yeah. I'm sure you had dreams about being famous, being a celebrity, being an artist.
Yeah.
You know, when we pray for these dreams, we always think about the positives, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't think about the negatives that come with it.
Of course.
With time now, when you look back
for
an upcoming artist, what advice would you give to them to help them navigate when the fame comes, when the money comes, when the status comes, when the celebrity comes? Hmm. How would you have advised younger Iyanya now to be able to navigate it? And what mistakes do you feel like you made back then?
I'll say to my younger self, don't take anything too personal. Including yourself, just like live, you know, enjoy, be in the moment, you know, don't worry about what's going to happen tomorrow, yesterday, just be here and now, you know, and enjoy what, you know, the blessings. And then kind of like being present, right, prepares you for literally anything because you're there. So if it happens, you are there, you're fully, you know, you're whole in that moment and you can manage whatever situation it is. And that's what I'll say to myself, my younger self.
And can you walk us through, you know, the business of music? So just to give you a little bit more insight of the Afropolitan that watches this, they love culture, but they want to always understand the business behind things, right? Okay. And so I'm curious, you know, as an artist, I know a lot of times Nigerian artists, what happens is, they get one hit song, they blow, they get a lot of money, and it's hard to maintain that, you know. So can you talk about how have you been able to sustain? It's been 17 years, right? How have you been able to maintain it?
Guidance. Guidance. Yeah. You know, the reason why I said I advise my younger self to not take things personal is because every famous person, every entertainer needs guidance. You need 1, 2, 3 people in your life to help keep you grounded.
Yeah.
Because everything is going to happen so fast and none of it is real. I don't know if it makes sense. Like, you're going to walk into a president's office, he's going to know your name, he's going to sing your song, but it's not real. You know, the same guy, if you're not popping 2, 3 years later, he's not going to even remember you. They have to remind him you came to his office. So you need guidance. You need to listen to the people that God puts in your life to guide you, because it's a bumpy road. You're going to go up, you're going to come down, you're going to go, and that's just how life is. So you need people. When you're going through the lows, you need people who would be able to guide you and help you navigate your way out, all the way up.
And who were those people?
For me, it's Ubi. For me, it's Ubi. I have a godfather. His name is Mr. Bola Modele. The good thing about it's mostly Ubi. Yeah, because what he's been able to do is to surround me with young, vibrant minds, you understand, who helped me reinvent myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
But can you talk about, because I know there was a time you guys had tension, right?
Of course.
And it's interesting because when we had Ace on this podcast, he talked about how him and David literally walked away from each other and came back. And it feels like you guys did the same thing. What happened? How did you guys come back? And how did you decide to move forward?
So Ubi never stopped saying we must work.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? But I was always in my feelings like, oh yeah, no. But then he was very consistent till today. Like that passion of I want my brother to succeed is still there till today from then. And then we obviously had meetings and we got to it. And it was clearer, which is why I talked about guidance. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody way older than you. You know, it's possible that the person could be your junior, could be your senior. But for Ubi, it's just been consistency, you know, the love, the dedication and all of that.
You know, as a creator, a lot of creators now have to understand the business side of things. Okay. Sometimes they just want to focus on the creative passion, right? Yeah. And sometimes the business people don't understand that creativity is not science, right? It's an art, right? So how have you been able to explain your process to like a partner like Ubi? Because from Ubi's conversation, even from doing work with Ubi, you can tell Ubi is business, work, this, that.
2 a.m.,
like
2 a.m.,
3 a.m., 4 a.m. But as the creative yourself, you need time to maybe isolate.
Yeah.
You need to be inspired. You need to have a creative flow. Yeah. Right. So what does that balance look like between the both of you and you guys' partnership?
Okay, so if there's one thing that I know he does consistently is ensuring that the team doesn't share a lot of the lows with me.
Mm.
It doesn't make sense. That way I'm able to just, you know, be in my world and enjoy my own space. And then anytime anybody lets me know, oh, this is what's going on, he gets real mad. Like, I want this guy to enjoy being the artist so that anytime it's time to record, you're recording from a place of happiness and genuine love. You get what I'm saying? Because this music thing, it's way more mental than just physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are going to be times when you can't record a song because you heard something.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be times when performing is going to be a hustle because you're dealing with something. So what Ubi has been able to do is to ensure that I only hear when the victory is won, if it makes sense. It's like, though we're going to silently go through it. And then once we succeed, we'll now come to this guy and say, look, 2 weeks ago, we had a huge, it was a big problem trying to clear this song, trying to, you know, shoot this video, trying to do this, but we've done it. So I hear it's good to go. I always hear it's good to go. It's good to go. So that helps me, you know, stay calm.
How do you feel like you've grown as an artist, even from the Project Fame days?
Yeah.
To the first debut album, even now to the current album as well.
Yeah.
Like when you look back at it, like Chico was saying, it's 17 years. I'm like, man, we're all getting old out here, right? But when you look back at how the industry has even evolved, how do you feel like you have grown as an artist? How has the music evolved as well?
Man, it's obvious. You know, I won't be having a conversation like this 5 years ago, 6 years ago, obviously. The sound obviously too has changed because back then I remember we used to just do songs because we're passionate musicians, but now it's business. And you have to understand that, you know, as a musician, I've had to learn to humble myself to be a performer most times. You know, it's like allow people to be a part of, you know, the creating process, like co-writers, and just like allow myself to be taught by people who are even younger than me in the industry, and that has really helped me grow a lot.
You know, I remember during the tour, specifically in Oakland that year, you know, you had performed all the songs, and so was the encore period. You know, you performed some R&B songs.
Yes.
And I think for me, being the person who was doing the tour, I was like, wow, I didn't know that there was an R&B side to you. But then later on, they were saying, no, that this is actually how Yan started off.
Of course.
When you think about your most ideal scenario, because obviously it feels like maybe in Africa or Nigeria forces us to sometimes play one way before we can play the way we want to play. Is your ideal situation R&B? Or is it now been
yes,
both?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. I grew up listening to the Boyz II Men, Al Kelly, Brian McKnight, Jay Holiday, Ginuwine, Tank.
Yeah.
These are all the people I grew up listening to. And then I grew up in the church, obviously. So I can, I'll definitely agree that my first love is R&B. But then you must understand that we're Africans, you know. And we can't sing R&B more than the people who literally created and introduced it to us. So now every artist must learn to be versatile, which is why I spoke about allowing people to be a part of my music creation process. You know, allowing new people to come in and be like, okay, it's crazy. Sometimes I'm recording. Listen, sometimes we have a camp and I'm recording and the guys write something. And I start singing it. The guys goes, you're singing it too much. Don't sing it. Don't sing it. Don't make it too sweet. I'm not.
Wait, what does that mean?
Exactly. I feel like that sometimes I'm just there like, what are you even talking about? Yeah. Like, am I not supposed to sing it? They say, no, like, talk, sing it.
Talk, sing it.
Yeah. There's a talk, sing phrase in camps all the time. I'll do something like, baby, this your booty, now confirm. They'll be like, no. It's too sweet. Right? Now you have to go, baby, this your booty, now confirm. Let me see you whine it to the ground.
That's completely different sound.
But do they feel like that's what Nigerians understand? Or what is it?
That's Africa.
That's Africa in general, right?
Yeah.
That's how we toast babes.
Exactly.
It's not too sweet.
Imagine you walking into a club now and there's a nice girl and you're trying to, you know, just raise and everything. You go, hey, baby, stick it in there. Who is this mad person? I go, come and get that. But if you go there and say, ah, baby, what's going to happen?
Sharp guy.
That's my kind of guy. So it's the same thing with the music.
But is it, how frustrating is that? Because I'm curious. So I feel like when you first came out, right? Yeah. Maybe it wasn't as easy or possible to completely leave Nigeria, enter to the US and just emerge as an R&B artist that happens to be Nigerian. Yeah. I feel like now it might be possible. Do you think that could happen where, you know, maybe you just fully go to America and just rebrand yourself as an R&B artist? And even maybe it's like your name is like, yeah, it's Nigerian, but
it's possible.
Mm.
It's possible because the thing is, if you can sing, you can sing.
Yeah.
You know, nobody can take that from you. So, and the good thing with American labels is that they understand the concept of you being the performer, right? So the American labels walk into this room, this parlor right now. They hear me sing. They go, I have 10 songs for you, you know. Just perform them. I don't need you. So it's very possible.
Yeah,
it's very, very possible. And also back home here, you know, people, they've started demanding for good music because they know it. You know, back in the days, let me remind you, there was a time in Nigeria when we had hits and lyrics. You know, they literally sold them on the roadside before the digital, you know, everything became
online,
digital.
Yeah.
You know, so we used to buy these books, read them, you know, learn the lyrics and sing this song. So we know good music. So I think right now, also back home, the people want good music.
Etche, remember that time I walked into a bank, I'm not going to give the name, and I asked them for $1,000 and they told me no, they cannot withdraw any dollar for me. And I was so upset. And I just remember asking everybody, how can I solve this issue? And I'm so happy that I finally have V-Band to finally solve this issue for me.
You know, the thing is, you should be able to have access to your money anywhere in the world when you get paid, right? So I'm grateful we have VBAN as a sponsor for the Afropolitan podcast. With VBAN, you're able to get paid in foreign currencies, whether it's pounds, USD, euros, and you can actually spend it in local currency as well. Now, you're also able to get a virtual card, which you can use to spend in and pay for services across the world, right? So I'm grateful to have VBAN as a sponsor.
You can download it on the Apple or Google Play Store. And remember, when you sign up, you use Afropolitan so they know you came from this podcast.
So the name of the new album is called The Forester's Son.
Yes. Right?
And your dad was a forester back in Calabar.
Yeah.
What inspired the name title, and what, you know, after everything you've been through, especially even with Project Fame, the same year you won Project Fame is the same year you lost, you know, your dad.
Yeah, I just buried my dad, and then like 1 week, 2 weeks, I got into the,
okay, you know, and so you were literally, you've in that same year, the highest of highs.
Yeah, of course.
And then the lowest of lows, of right?
Yeah.
How are you able to navigate like both emotions? And also, I wonder if that has anything to do with the title of the album as well.
Okay, so it's just the title of the album is, you know, just for my dad, you know, trying to just say, listen, wherever you are, you created this great man here, and this is dedicated to you, you know, for memory's sake, legacy and all of that. And your second question was, have I been able to manage
both? Like that year, right? Like you literally on the highest of highs and then the lowest of lows with the losses that you experienced, right? So did it give you a perspective where it's like, you, as you move now, you know that life can give you both in the same year? You know, sometimes people think like when it's going good, the good times will last, and then if the bad times come, it's the bad times. But in that year, you experienced both the highs and then the low.
Yeah. You know, I talked about being present. That is all you need to do. Just when it's high, you're there. When it's low, you're there. You know, just go through it and know that that's life. You know, that's what I've learned. You know, just like always balance. The balance is knowing that you can't really do anything about it, but just be in the moment and then manage whatever. If it is the highs, you manage it. Don't get too carried away. The lows, you manage it. And trying to surround yourself with people who can help you get back up.
When we had MI here, he talked about, you know, as an older artist now, he gets to like advise the younger artists, whether they listen or not. You know, it depends on them. But, you know, every artist has the moment where they're like, look, we're the number one. The songs are ringing off the charts. Everything feels like the world is on our feet.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you don't keep perspective, you can literally go off
of course,
right?
Of course.
What does it look like now when you're advising younger artists? Like, look, I think MI said at the time, you know, when he was first starting, Style Plus were like the number one, right?
Of course.
And I think Aldo was saying to him, like, you know, they're on the way out, you're on the way in, right? And he couldn't understand that because, like, at the time, they're literally number one. How can they be on the way out? What did that look like for you when, you know, you were on the way in? What were they, the artists that you looked up to, who you were like, oh, that person is like, if I can just get there and be at that level, you know, it's fine. But then I'm sure you ended up surpassing even that. So what did that process look like for you?
You know, in that moment, you're not even sure you're going to make it.
Mm.
You're literally going back and forth, you know, with your emotions. Sometimes, I remember there were times it felt like it would never happen. I was definitely inspired by Style Plus, you know, these people that made me believe that R&B was possible. Banky W.
P Square, maybe.
You know, these are all people that gave me the faith I needed to keep believing, to keep pushing. I remember Banky had the remix of one of his songs with Konga, you know, and that was one of my favorite songs. And I just remember that being one of the songs I used to listen to, Plantation Boys.
Yep.
To Phase, Blackface, all this out, Paul Play, Aikidaro.
Yeah.
I had to listen to all these people, and their music gave me a lot of faith to keep believing in myself.
Well, were there any artists who gave you advice around that time that really proved you know, impactful?
Yes, Soul Rest in Peace, the late Sound Sultan. One of the advices he gave me was that, you know, when I started, I used to wear a lot of hats and glasses. When I started, so one day, we were backstage and he called me and I went, I said, Baba, I greet you. And he said to me, if you keep wearing this face cap and hat, when you don't have it on, people won't know it's you. So I want you to stop wearing it and start showing people your face. You can wear your glasses, but I want people to know your face. And I took that advice and it really worked for me.
Mm.
Yeah, Two-Face too, because he was my neighbor at some point. You know, we used to hang and he would just share a lot of things with me. Yeah.
And what is your, you know, your strategy now, right? As you're coming out with this new album, is there anything you feel like you're doing differently? Is there anything that you're changing from what you did 5 years ago? Because especially now that Afrobeats and even just African music in general, it's global. So like, how do you make sure that this album beyond Nigeria pushes beyond these shores?
I'm doing what everybody winning is doing. I'm doing the TikToks. I'm doing the Snapchats. You know, you just never know after this interview, you guys are going to get grocery. You see me throwing my hands. I have a camera standing. I'm throwing my legs up. You're like, is this guy all right? So I'm doing literally everything everybody's doing. Doesn't matter when you came into the game, I'm doing it, you know, because that's what everybody waiting is doing. Like I said, back in the day, it was a thing of ego. You know, you don't want people to write for you.
Yeah.
Because we didn't understand the concept of being the writer and being the performer 5 years ago. It wasn't clear. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the clarity we have now that it's the greatest songs you listen to growing up till date were written by other people and then performed by other people. So now I'm also allowing myself to just be a performer and enjoying the process of being a performer and then also writing and co-writing for other people and all of that.
I know we've had some guests on here that talk about the fame from a place of like it being sometimes like an addiction or a drug, right? Where like you know what it feels like to be literally at the top of the top.
Of course.
And when that moment comes down a little bit, it's like you don't know how to react because people also change up on you,
of course.
Right?
Of course.
What did that look like in your own story?
Mm.
And what advice would you have? And you already told the young artists, like, you know, don't take things personal,
be present.
But what did that story look like for you where you're like, wow, so people can actually change up like this, right? And it doesn't have to be like specific names, but just the narrative around like to reinforce that this does actually happen to people. What did that look like in your case?
Oh man, it was frustration, depression, addiction, all of that. You know, once that happens, you go through that, and that's the craziest part of being famous, because you either win or lose completely. I'm thankful to God that I was able to make it through by His grace, you know, because we've all had our fair share of these ups and downs, you know, in this industry. But I'm just thankful that I had a few good people to help me, you know, get back up.
You know, going back to Chika's point around what Asa said about Davido, right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes, and you can just correct me if I'm wrong, but... Yeah. You know, when you both start off, you were both young, you're both trying to make
it,
you know, and then maybe you split and then you go out into the world, you both go out into the world.
Yeah.
And then the world shows you that, listen, that fight that I was having with my brother, that is the best case scenario that you're going to be having because everybody else out here is on demon time.
What did
that look like for you when, and I want to know like specifically like who reached out to who first, like, and because sometimes to reconcile, there's the person who has to be able to say, okay, we haven't talked in a while. Like, let's actually meet. What did that look like? How did that process go?
So the thing with me and Ubi is that we had our issues, but we didn't really stop talking. If it doesn't make sense, you know, we didn't say, oh, I'm not talking to you again. I'm not talking to you. You know, it's just we didn't talk as much as we used to till we now started talking. So we had, and like I said, he has always been the consistent. Bro, we can do this again. We can do this again. We can do this again. And like I said, I'm a very, very emotional person. I'm a Scorpio.
Your birthday is coming up. Your birthday is coming up.
Yeah, man. 31st October. So I'm a Scorpio. Like, yeah. I'm a Scorpio king, if you get what I'm saying. Yeah. So I'm a very, very emotional, like, deep processing it. I'm already ahead of you kind of guy. And that was when I was younger. So now I've had to, like, train and my mind and which is why I said just be present and don't take things too personal, because things, if I knew the things I know now, we probably won't have the problems we had back then. Does it make sense? So now I've had to, you know, just talk to myself and say, bro, don't take, it's not that deep, don't worry, it's not even that deep, just let it slide, and then it's, life is easier like that.
You know, Chika has this book that she's working on, and she's going to be talking about timeline grief. So is this thing about, like, you know, when you get to a certain age and you don't have the things you thought you would have, you sometimes, like, end up having to grieve that whole process, right? I wanted to understand what it looks like from a perspective of yours, because so many times with artists or celebrities, it's almost like you get the song, you blow, it is almost like the world just comes to you. And it's almost like your own timeline grief is almost in reverse. Some people mourn the life they never got to have, maybe in their 20s or 30s or 40s. It's almost like you blow in your maybe 20s and maybe even 30s, but then later on in life, it might slow down, right?
It will slow down.
It will slow down. So what does that look like for you when you go back to think through your timeline grief? Number one, but two, how does it also relate to, you know, the loss you had with your family, where you're like, I wish my dad or mom or even brother were here to see, you know, all these things that have happened with me too.
I tell you one of the reasons why I went through my addiction phase was because I was running away from, you know, spending time with those thoughts. Does it make sense? Like, I didn't want, you see, if you, yeah, you lose a dad, you lose a mom, you lose a brother, but losing three in the space of 2 years, you know, I was angry at God. I was angry at the world. I was angry at myself for even being born to people who I didn't see anymore. I was just mad at the world. And when that happens, you only save, the only thing that saves you is grace, right? So I know that I've had to, even till now, I try not to think about it. I have pictures of my late family, but I hardly go back to those pictures. Because I know that once I get in that zone, I have to be vulnerable. I have to break down. I have to cry. I have to do all that stuff. And this job, this career, this space doesn't allow you to, you can't succeed with that kind of emotion. So I just keep it moving. You know, if I have to take a shot to keep it moving, if I have to do whatever I have to do just to keep it moving, I keep it moving. That's it.
Have you ever considered therapy?
Well, people keep talking about therapy, and I'm not, like I always say, it's good for the people it's good for. But there's just some things you go through, man. Only God can save, man. Like, I don't know how I'd feel if I have to go pay someone to help fix me, and then they're fixing me for, and they go, we have 2 hours, and they fix me for 2 hours, and I pay them and they leave, and I have another 22 hours to deal with stuff that is in my head. And most times you're not honest enough to share what the real problem is with this guy or this woman, because you're still looking like, can I trust you? That kind of thing. So I just think that for me, it's just, I just go down on my knees and pray, and I make sure that I surround myself with people who tell me the truth. They, you know, that's why I love Obi so much, because he doesn't patronize you. You know, if something is wrong, he's going to tell you it's wrong. If it's good, he's going to tell you it's good. So I just surround myself with a few good people that I know that even if I'm feeling some type of way, I don't have to really necessarily come to you and say a lot. Just your energy, your presence is good enough, heals. So I surround myself with people.
That healing is such an important thing too. Yes. Because I know for me, I did do therapy.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And I think very active, very, very active. And yeah, you're right. You definitely do have to pay for time.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that it's unlocked for me is emotional intelligence. Yeah. But also, too many times we have certain behaviors that we think, okay, this is how we are.
Yeah.
And the self-talk we have with ourselves is like, this is how it's always going to be, right? And you don't realize how a lot of those things are traced to obviously even childhood, to some of the traumas. Yeah. So it's almost like therapy allows you to go back, journey backwards.
Yeah.
And go back to when you were a kid, find the key or the door that you had thought was never going to be open. Yeah. Open it, see it for yourself. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, now that I understand where this is coming from, your mind now starts to heal.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be immediate, but it's just more of like, I understand where this is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I now know that, like, you know, you can say to yourself, it ends with me. Like, if there was something that happened, like in the family that's trauma, it's like, okay, in my own life, in my future family, it's going to end with me. And, you know, you surround yourself, like you said, with people who hold you accountable, who will tell you the truth, you know. So I definitely recommend it, again, also with God, right? Like, I don't think the spiritual angle ever goes out the door.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You've spoken well, right? That was in America, right?
I did it in America, but I have a therapist in Nigeria too.
You have a therapist?
Yeah. Well, and she's really good too.
I don't know about Nigerian therapists. I've never met.
Before you go get your G-spot, it's that blog.
You know, the thing about, you know, having a therapist in Nigeria, I'm not disrespecting any therapist out there. This is me just being honest. You don't want to have a problem with your Nigerian therapist, man. It's like, you don't want your therapist taking you to the blogs, man. They paid for 2 sessions, came here and was shouting. You know, I guess somebody has to introduce me to a very professional therapist for me to be able to confidently just like sit down and talk with you, because it's my birthday in a couple of days. I'm going to be 40 next year.
Wow.
Right? So if I've not sat down with a therapist to share my true stories, and I'm here till 40, then God has been faithful. And I've obviously been doing a great job by just believing in myself. So I read a lot. I read a lot. I am a very huge documentary fan. I like to watch documentaries a lot. You know, just like, if I hear that somebody maybe years ago went through the same thing I went through, I want to go to this person's page, this person's YouTube channel, because I know people make fun of motivational speakers, but until you go through stuff, you can't understand what the other person is sharing, because they're sharing what they went through. They're literally, it's victory. They're in a victory moment. So they're sharing what helped them to get to victory. So I always listen to a lot of podcasts that make sense, a lot of documentaries, a lot of preachings, all of that stuff. I worship a lot, you know, even though people don't believe that. Because, I do. I worship a lot. I was a church boy.
Yeah.
My late grandfather was a reverend, you know, and all of that stuff. So I just pray. I pray a lot, and God is always faithful.
Do you have a church home?
Huh?
Do you have a home, like a church home, like a place you go to, or
church?
Yeah.
I go to Harvesters or Logic Church here because I love the pastors. Pastor Bology, a blessing to me. I just started going to Logic too.
Yeah,
Pastor Flourish. You know, they're all sound guys, and they really help. Their words help.
So in 2013, the endorsements were crazy, right?
Yeah.
If you could redesign your 2013-2015 cash flow as 2025 Inyanya, right? How would you allocate living, liquidity, long-term, and legacy? So now that you know everything you know, right? And you know, like, as an artist, as a career, it's long-term.
Mm-hmm.
2025 Inyanya, mm-hmm. versus 2013. Yeah, yeah. What would you say to him? Like, guy, they think about this other thing, put money away here, do this, do this, do that, do this. How would you allocate that across, like, you know,
now
living, yeah, liquidity, long term, and legacy?
Ownership.
Ownership. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ownership. Because back then, you start making money. This guy's been wearing Balenciaga the whole time, oppressing you. You want to get yours too. This guy took your girlfriend with the Benz. You want to buy your own Benz?
You want to take somebody else's girlfriend?
Well, I don't know if I did that, but
I got a Benz. Knowingly.
You had a neighbor who said you would never drive a Range. You want to buy that Range? But now it's just ownership, you know, merchandise, investment, real estate. You want to invest in people.
Yeah.
You want to invest in small businesses. You want to own at least 5 to 10 businesses now to be able to say that, okay, yeah, I'm going to be here and I'm going to live this life for the longest.
Mm. Is there ever going to be a time you just retire completely? Like, because you see this as just a certain chapter in your life, and maybe, I don't know, maybe you have other business ideas or things you want to pursue.
Music, for me, I know at some point I'm going to have to, you know, go back to church.
Mm.
Obviously, at some point, I'm going to have to go back to church because that's what I was created for. But that's not going to stop performance, you know. But then I'm going to get to the vintage, you know, stage of my life where it's going to be billionaires and people who are rich enough to be able to say, okay, it's my 50th, 60th birthday and I want it to be yaya. Because I'm not doing every show. You know, that's where I'm headed.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think there was a time you were appointed as the senior special assistant for tourism.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you talk about that journey? How did that even come to be? Man. What it was it like?
Oh, shout out to my former governor, Benayade. He was a good man to me. He used that to support me and obviously like help me. That was a crazy time for me. So that also came when I needed it the most. You know, I was paid salaries, you know, and I got the support I needed from the governor anytime I needed it. Yeah.
And why was it a crazy time for you? Was this, because this was, I guess, after COVID, right? Or right after
COVID.
Yeah.
So you know, the thing with this industry is when you don't have a hit, people start showing you their true colors.
Mm. Okay, so talk about that.
Yeah, that's why I said nothing. You can't. There's nothing that you do now that impresses me because I've seen like so much. You know, I've heard people say, "Oh, you're my man," and the same people switch. You know, even to other camps. You know, and they make it obvious. They would even, you know, say bad things about you to the other camps because you don't have a song, you know, popping in. And it's just crazy how you drop one song and it's doing well and the same people are back to you. So I was in that moment when I didn't have a hit song, but I was dropping R&B music.
Yeah.
So that came when I needed the financial support that I need because the governor helped me shoot a couple of videos then, Benayade, yeah.
So Afrobeats went global after, yeah, like, you know, we'll say like 2017, 2018.
Yes.
But this was obviously after like Kukere had been,
yeah,
out, right?
Yeah.
From your vantage point,
yeah,
what actually changed? Was it the products, the platforms, or the politics? Or even all three?
All of it.
Yeah.
Everything changed, you, yeah, know.
What did it look like observing it? Like, because you're in the game, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, look, you know, I know we this happened across different industries, right?
Yes.
But in specifically in music, one, yeah, day we were buying CDs or we're doing iTunes. Next thing you know, we're streaming. I was telling Chica, like, I used to have all these playlists on my phone,
mm-hmm,
on my iPhone.
Yeah.
When Apple turned on Apple Music, all my playlists just got deleted. And nobody talks about it. Like, you know, so what did that look like from your vantage point?
Like I said, man, it's all about reinventing yourself. And, you know, I always talk about not putting yourself in a box as a creative that kills you, you know, and not thinking that you know it all. You know, that has really helped me a lot. Just allowing myself to always feel like I just got in, right? Because I've been around to experience everything you just mentioned here. I had to buy CDs and play them in my the RAV4 I won 2008 to be able to learn how to make commercial music. Because I won a singing competition, and I was thinking, because I won a singing competition, right, all I have to do is just sing. And then the guys who did the competition go, no, we need commercial music. So I had to buy CDs. So I remember buying CDs. There was this popular one loader VCD that had lights on it. It was such a big deal. You press it, it comes out, you put it in.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, it was a huge thing. If you didn't have it, your girlfriend had problems with you. You know, it was, you needed that. From there to just like streaming songs, from long songs to 2 minute songs, 1 minute, 40 second songs. You know, it's just, for me, it's just being versatile and allowing yourself to be new every time.
And actually, I'm seeing that also you are doing a US tour, right? Yes. And it's been London, a long time.
Europe tour.
Yes. You
know, taking the album worldwide.
Yeah. So explain to me, like, number one, how did you pick the cities, right? Or maybe it's your team that's doing it.
Yeah.
How are you preparing for this tour? What are you expecting? What, and, you know, when you finish, because it's what, like 13 or how many cities?
10 cities.
10 cities. Yeah. So after the 10 cities, what do you hope happens?
What happens every time you tour is, after the tour, the numbers go up. That's why, you know, the best time to tour is when you drop new material, because you have people coming to listen to old material and new material. Now, when you have all these people in one place, they have no other option but to listen to new material, because it's good material, especially if it's good. And then they share it. You know, let's say you have a sold out 20K capacity and you performed 3-4 of your new songs. You can multiply that, especially if they liked it. Even if it's 5,000 people who genuinely, you know, go to your Spotify, your Apple, whatever app your music is on and download it, they will always share it. So I always notice that after every tour, the songs get bigger. The more performances, the more bookings after the tour. Mm. Yeah.
You know, Afrobeats artists, you know, some of them have obviously sold out Madison Square Garden, you know, arenas that we could only have dreamt of, Burna Boy doing stadiums.
Of course.
You know, you did Indigo too, like way back then. And I remember it being like a huge thing.
Of course.
At that point.
Yeah.
When you look back now at how the music has grown, like talk a little bit to, like, you know, did we ever expect it to get to this level? What did it look like back then? And what were some people saying to limit the artists back then by saying, okay, this is the most you could get to. But now we're like at a stadium level and the music is worldwide.
Oh man, it was crazy, man. I remember we went to ATL. You know, we hooked up with Akon, went to Akon's studio. It was trying to help us to get a collaboration with Nicki Minaj.
Mm-hmm.
We're charged a quarter of $1 million.
For a feature.
Yeah.
For a feature with Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, and I remember us, I would be saying, we don't have up to the amount, but we have close to it. And they, you know, it didn't come through still. I remember the first tour, you can ask Big A. I remember there were cities that I went to way back 2013, and I was the first African
artist.
They didn't even know what African music, Afrobeats was like. True. Do you understand what I'm saying? And fast forward today it's a different ball game. So I, you know, big shout out. And flowers to all the key players of Afrobeats.
It's so funny because I think in Oakland, because I did the Oakland show, you were our fourth Afrobeats artist.
Okay.
We had done Two-Face, P-Square, Timaya.
Yeah.
And then...
yeah, so. The first tour I did with Big A, there were cities we went to and we had 5,000, 10,000 people. And there were cities we went to, there were 10 people.
Really?
Because most of them didn't even know what the promoter was talking about. Yeah. They didn't even believe the guy. It's like, why? They didn't even believe we were coming. So there were cities I went to. Let's say the show was on the 7th. I got there 7th morning. The guys didn't buy the ticket because they didn't think it was possible.
I believe.
Yeah. And then when the promoter goes, he's here.
They said buy tickets, yeah. Yeah, you're triggering me right now. That's how it used to be. Because I remember where you guys landed too. We had to do the same thing. We were like, yo, he's here. Yeah. He's actually here too.
And then the guy goes, we have to go to this African restaurant.
Yeah, to get food.
Yeah, when we go there, people will see you and know that you're here. And you go there, they will start telling you, bad guy, you bring him.
Nah, it was really triggering. But you know, the funny thing too about that time, like looking back and from the promoter's perspective, because obviously now you have like the Live Nations of the world.
Yeah.
Of them, you know, because those people, you'd been there, you saw 5,000 people, you've seen 10,000 people. Yeah. But you know, because we didn't have a formalized structure, right? They never count those as actual tickets, even though those tickets are sold. These were people who were there. And it wasn't until Live Nation came in with their structure. They're now saying, okay, yes, you people have been saying you've been selling shows, but where's the formalized structure? Where's the data?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, it's something that, because now you see a new wave of like promoters and then the ones who helped set the tone don't necessarily get to benefit from what they did, right? When you look back at that, because you've also had to go through being an independent artist with a label in different formats, right? Yeah. What advice do you have for an artist when choosing which format to go with, whether it's being with a label or being independent? Because you have to basically choose between ownership and then maybe prioritizing scale, right? So which advice or which one do you think is optimal for an upcoming artist?
The first thing every artist must consider is the finances needed to first invest in your craft and then obviously maintain. When you think of that should humble you, especially when you see somebody who's ready to invest in you. That's the first thing I want to say. So once you understand that, okay, I need investors, and then you find them, it should humble you enough to serve. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Young artists must learn to, unless you have the financial backings, and even if you do, I know people who've spent millions of dollars in this music and they don't have a hit till now. I know labels who've invested millions and they've given up. Do you understand? So you still need people who know how, even if you have money. So for me, it's just being humble with it. Surrounding yourself with, even if you want to start up your label, don't just do it with anybody. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because sometimes you think, oh, because you grew up with somebody, you guys are going to have a great label. The person doesn't know what they're doing.
The business, yeah.
And you too, you don't even know. So you guys are going to clash. So for me, it's just be humble with it. Allow yourself to learn the process and be patient with it. You understand? You need a label at some point. You do. Whether you like it or not. You need that umbrella. You need a group of people to wake up every morning and say, how do we move Yaya from A to Z? Every artist needs that. Every artist winning needs that. So you can't just do it alone. It's not possible. You're going to need it. You're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And then we're not alone. There's a sofa here, but there's a team.
Yeah.
So you're going to need a team at some point. So allow yourself to experience the whole 9 yards of being an entertainer.
Let's talk about Kukere. Yeah. It wasn't just a song. It was a cultural export, of right? Course. So you were able to balance like the Efik language with the Tigi dance, right? Can you walk us through how it started, how it got recorded? I think Ubi gave us a little bit, but I want to get it from your perspective as well.
Okay. Yeah. So the first song, shout out to D-Tunes. The first song we recorded when Ubi introduced me to D-Tunes was Amogi, What's Your Flavor? That's the first song we recorded. The first song me and D-Tunes ever made was that. And then it was Christmas and I went back home. The Etiki dance was trending. Everywhere I went to, everybody was dancing. But we didn't have a cultural, song for it. So I go back to Lagos and I said to D-Tunes, there's this dance that's, it was raining years ago, but it's back now. I'd like for us to do a song for it. So I had to show him videos of the dance. And then most of the sounds you hear on that track, and I had to make them with my mouth, like, you know, all those kind of things. And D-Tunes, the good thing with me and D-Tunes, any sound I make with my mouth is able to bring it to life. So we made it, and I didn't like it. Because you know why I didn't like it? I had so many beautiful girls who loved my R&B side. And you know, R&B guys and girls, we like when the girls shout when you're singing. So, and every time I'm singing this R&B, the girls go, oh, God. And for a young artist, you think that's a great achievement, right? That you're singing sweet and all these girls love you, but you're not making money, you're not paying bills. So I didn't like the song. I didn't put my name. You listen to it, I didn't put a tag. I didn't say, yeah, I didn't, nothing, because I didn't like it. And then I didn't finish the song. We started making other songs. I didn't care about it. A few months. I didn't know Ubi had been playing the songs over and over, taking it around, playing it, getting opinions. I didn't know he was doing all that. And then one day, I just got a house on the mainland. Because, you know, I was with Casey of Casey Presh. I stayed with, after winning Project Fame, I stayed with Casey and Imoni for like 2 years. They housed me. And then one day Ubi called me. I just got a small one-bedroom apartment. I got my fridge. I got my AC. I was disturbing my neighbors. It was loud as hell. And then Ubi calls me and goes, wait. I said, I did. Yeah. Come island. I said, what thing happened? Yeah, some people hear this your cookery song. They say they want me to perform for their event. I was like, they will pay. They say, they won't pay 500K.
Back then.
2011, 10-ish. Bro, I say, I just collect new place, so. And they try set up the place. Listen, I don't buy TV. I don't do everything. He said, just come. Oh, okay, just come finish. We'll do the performance. You go back. I rushed. I got there. I go in the studio with D-Tunes. I finished the song. Funny enough, guess who inspired that song? Mm-hmm. When I was recording. Kelly Handsome.
Kelly Handsome. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because my favorite song then was I Go On Party for Calabar. Mm-hmm. He gave him mad. So that's thankful for all he has done. So I just used that same
cadence.
Yeah, to record the song, and I finished. Now I'm recording this song the whole time, and all I'm thinking of is 500K. The whole time. I'm saying, I don't even care what you do after this recording with you. I'm here for that 500K. I came all the way from the mainland. I needed blenders. I needed kitchen utensils. So I already knew that, okay, once I get this 500K, worst case, anything that comes, I'll be able to buy things when I'm going back to the mainland. I had a girlfriend and I'm not going to go back.
Empty-handed.
I finished recording. Ubi disappeared. I'm like, bro.
Where's the 500K, though?
Wait, first of all, no. It was the BlackBerry day. So I'm pinging this guy like, bro, I don't finish the song. He said, X minute. Send him to my email. They sent it to him. I didn't hear from Ubi again. Do you know I was in Ubi's place where we were squatting together? I was there for days. I did see Ubi. The next Ubi pulls up, he's laughing. I'm like, what's going to happen, bro? He said, bro, nobody get any show. I said, wait. No 500K. He said, no 500K. I believe in the song. I just want me to complete. I too believe in the song. I want me to complete. I said, bro. So nobody did pay any money like this. Say nobody did pay any money. It was just laughing. Long story short, I didn't go back to that house till today.
Really?
Are you serious?
Yeah, that was the beginning of everything.
Wow.
I didn't go back. I didn't know all my properties there. I just gave them away. I did from the day I left Complete Cookery, I didn't go back to that compound.
Wow. Wow.
And then from there, we started doing what we're doing now, which is going around everywhere promoting mm-hmm. the album. And then there was this Men of Ice face off celebrity basketball they used to do. We had gone to several universities, you know. What we did was tap into whatever event they had, you know, and we'll go there. If they had their Miss whatever pageant, we would say, okay, we're coming to perform for free. And then we'll go there and perform. And one day was Men of Ice's first face-off. And I saw Jazzy doing the Ethere dance. I saw Tiwa doing the Ethere dance. I saw the late Sound Sultan. They were all doing it. And I was like, okay, it's working. And then subsequently, we started getting... Cookery actually blew from Ghana.
Ghana?
Yeah, it was Ghana that really blew Cookery.
Shout out to our Ghanaians.
Yeah, yeah. You know things. My grandma was from Accra.
Mm.
Yeah, my late grandma was from Ghana. So when that happened, I was like, wow. You know, this is really good. You know, that it was a zone tour and they were really doing the Cookery. There was a compilation of Ghanaians just doing different dances to the song. And from there, we just kept it moving.
Wow. It's like you telling this story too mm-hmm. about like even Ubi's role, right? Yeah. Because so many times it's like you might know that, okay, my guy needs this other motivation to finish this thing.
Yeah.
But that I believe in this thing so much because I don't think... He believed in it, clearly.
Yes.
But there was no evidence, like, at that point that this is going to be the song that gets us out of the hood, right?
Course. Yeah.
So what does that look like? And I think the reason why I'm talking about it is even with us too, we're partners, right?
Yeah.
In business, in life, in love, in marriage. But that there are times when she would say something, there might not be any evidence on ground. There are times when I say something, there might not be any evidence on ground. Now, how we motivate each other to do it, we'll figure that one out.
Yeah.
But what did it teach you from Ubi's perspective? Because I'm sure when this one worked, he's like, remember, this is what I was trying to tell you. This is what it does. So from a partnership perspective, how do you learn to trust your partner's call on saying, okay, they're saying that this is the one that might work and they believe in it? How does that shape out for you?
Yeah. So we call him the solutionist.
The solutionist.
Ubi. Yeah, I call him Ginger.
Yeah.
The reason why it's that way is because he rarely tells you to do something and it doesn't work. Which is why I spoke about guidance, not minding the person's age or position, just like the person is there. And for Ubi, I can't remember a lot of things he has advised we do that didn't work out. So you don't have any option but to allow him, which is why I spoke about guidance, just like allow him lead because he knows the terrain and then learn from him and then you together you guys are able to succeed.
So it seems like in your class sets, you guys were a little bit more collaborative, right? So you were able to work with like the Whiskers, the Badge, Flavor. Now there's a perceived tension around like the big three or the top artists in the industry, right? From a ecosystem perspective, do you believe that competition is healthy or do you believe collaboration is much more better to help grow the ecosystem?
What are you
or
liking?
The industry?
What are you liking or not? Competition is healthy. Whether you like it or not. Silent competition or, you know, loud, obvious competitions. It's inevitable because we are human beings, you know. But then the smartest people collaborate. Do you understand? Because they understand the power of collaboration, right? So the smart ones don't compete with people they can benefit from or share wins with, if it makes sense. It's just a matter of, you know, okay, this is a collaboration.
Yeah.
Yes.
You guys are about, you just, when we started, you said the people listening, train. So this is a collaboration.
Yes.
I came here to collaborate with you people. Yeah. So there are people who are going to know me today via this podcast, right? So it's the same thing with our music. Once I know that, okay, artist A has the right fan base and, you know, obviously the right team, they're doing well. I want to align with that kind of person.
Yeah.
Not minding their age or how long they've been in the game, but are they winning? Are they succeeding? You know, are they talented enough? All of that stuff. So for me, I'd say just collaborate with the right people. That's all. You know, not necessarily everybody.
When Techno came into MMG, I think Ubi gave us some of the backstory, but from your perspective, I know Ubi told the story about, you know, you guys had this big house and then you know, you're talking about being in the room. I don't know if it was the room next to yours or something.
It was the room next, opposite mine.
Opposite yours, right? And what was it like from your perspective? Like, maybe talk about his talent. What did you observe from your perspective?
Oh, Techno? Man. One thing I can say about Techno is that he's a very hardworking artist. And he's literally addicted to his art, his craft. He's back then, Techno would be on this production thing from morning till night. You can hear him from my room. 2 a.m. morning, he's there, he's working, he's buying all the gadgets he needs. You know, you walk into his rooms like a small sci-fi office, like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not surprised that he's where he is today, you know, because when we started and he started staying with us, it wasn't easy, because you know when you've been in the game for a long time, and then you're now close to someone who just started doing it. There's something that makes you think, oh, yeah, you know more than this person. You always feel like, oh, because you've been around. But with Techno, it was collaboration still, because there were times he would do a song and say, I want you to listen to it. I want you to be on this song. I want you to... And I'll go there and I'll listen to it and I'd say, bro, you're ready for the game, obviously.
You know, in I believe it was in 2012, there was a Dana Air crash that killed about 153 people. You guys were supposed to be on that flight.
Yes.
And they say that it was you that actually said, let's stay back one night.
Yeah. Wow, that's God protecting you.
Yes. What prompted that? Like, what was the story behind that as well?
Man, that was crazy. So, you know, the thing with Abuja is so chilled compared to Lagos. So every time you go to Abuja, you don't want to leave.
Lagos is so crazy.
You always want to stay a day or two. So that day, our flight was towards the evening. It's usually last flight, you know, when you're leaving Abuja. So we're on our way to the airport. And I just kept feeling it in my heart that, Let's stay back. I kept saying, let's stay back. And then we were driving to the airport, and then it was just this thing that made me rage and say, let's stay back now.
And this is a whole convoy heading to the airport.
Yeah, this is people the whole team. Bags, everybody. We're close to the airport, literally.
It's crazy.
Like, we're literally close to the airport. And I'm like, ah, bro, let's stay back now. What are we even going to do in this Lagos, Seth? Let's just stay back here and then there was this place, guess what? There was these nice lounges, they had good food. I was like, let's just go there, eat. We've been walking now, and then the whole team was like, okay, let's go. And then we turned. Few hours later, the team just walked into my room and everybody was hugging me, and I was like, what's going on? You see, that plane crashed. Yeah.
Wow.
It was just God. I was numb for like 4 or 5 days. I couldn't even believe it.
Wow.
My dad was supposed to be on that plane too.
Oh my God. Listen, I was numb for days. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it.
Well, actually, I want to switch gears. Speaking on that, personally, right? Yeah. So your name has been in the headlines for different relationships, right? Okay. And so I want you to talk about what lessons have you learned there since those different headlines, those different
relationships?
Yeah, like girlfriends, different things like that.
Oh man, keep it on low.
Keep it on the low.
No more public.
Low key, yeah, man. Low key's best key, man. Because I don't know, for some reason, man, popular people like to make their issues public. You know, you don't want to break a popular girl's heart, man.
You don't want to break a popular girl's heart?
Not intentionally. Like, but you're dating a popular girl and something happens. The minute she starts deleting pictures, everybody knows. And she starts putting quotes like, man has come and stuff like that. Everybody knows you're the guy she's talking about. Because, you know, when you're famous and you start dating, people, all of a sudden, they start creating pages for you people, mommy and daddy and all that trash. Oh, the, you know, this sheep, that sheep. And these people, it's not like they love you like that. It's just clout. And then you guys have serious issues. You can't sit down together. She's unwilling to forgive you anymore. You don't want to forgive her anymore because of what people will say, what people will think. Did you beg her? I did a beg woman. I did a beg man. So for me, it's just low key, man. I've learned to keep it low, just on the low, man. Don't be loud about it. At least let's be sure before you're loud about it. You know?
You think you're going to get married?
Eventually, I will. I must. I have to, I guess. But I'm not in a rush to do it. Mm. You know, I'm not going to do it because everybody thinks I'm getting old. You understand? I'm going to do it when time is right and I know that, okay, this person is good enough for me to do it with, because it's a very, you know, imperative decision. It can make you or break you. And then for us famous people, especially the guys, if you've checked the online space, every time a famous guy breaks up with this girl, she always comes out to say why, you know, she had to break up with him. He died. He was not. You hear a lot of people saying he's a deadbeat. He's a deadbeat. But if the guy wasn't popular, you wouldn't say that. Right? You know, if he was just a normal guy, you probably say he's a normal guy. Let me. But because you're famous and you were unable to pay your child's school fees, you have problems with your baby mom. She's going to come out and say, I was the one, you know, doing everything. And that's going to make you look bad. A lot of guys don't, a lot of famous guys, they can't recover from that. Yeah. So I've just learned to keep it low key. I'm not dating now, though.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You don't want to date?
It's hard. It's really hard because of the experiences that I've had being me. It's very, very hard. I've met a lot of amazing ladies in my life, but I think that because I'm still healing, they've experienced the side of me that doesn't work for us, if it makes sense. So I'm still in that process of just like every day saying to myself that, you know, you can still do it.
Did healing come? Because I know we had DJ Obi here and he was talking about how he had his own healing journey. And I was asking him, you know, when a man decides to like go on this healing journey intentionally, right? Yeah. He realizes that he needs to cut off certain things, of course. So what are some of the things you had to cut off? I know we talked about, you know, he said he had been celibate. He had been, you know, maybe not dating. What are some of the things you have had to fast from, basically?
Man. You see, my celibacy fluctuates.
You say it fluctuates?
It goes up and down. You know, sometimes you go, celibate. You just run into this girl again, man. It's crazy. And she gives you all the reasons why you shouldn't be celibate.
Except to get married.
Well, I don't even think of that. But I just know that you meet this girl and everything about this girl says, why are you celibate, this guy? Now, you do what you have to do. You now start missing the celibacy again. So, for me, I'm very honest when I meet people now. I think that's what has helped me a lot. When I meet you, I don't go, oh, I'm crazy about you. When I meet you, I go, hey, listen, I'm healing. Don't expect so much from me. I'm not there yet. You know, maybe when I was younger, I wouldn't mind. I'll just say what you want to hear. But now, what has really helped me a lot is just say, I'm not in that space. And I'm not going to lie with you or play with your emotions. All right. I'm not there. If you're there, I'm not there. If you're going to stick around, if you're patient enough for me to at least get to a, you know, a convenient space, then we can do it. But for now, I won't lie to you. It's one of the hardest things to be committed, because I've done it. I've been committed severally as a famous guy, and it always hurts. Mm. Yeah, you know, when you're famous, you always have girls. They can't wait to go to the blogs when you have problems. And these are people you love, you know, because it's not possible for me to be in this industry 17 years. I'm 39 now. And all I'm doing is just having fun. Of course, I have emotions. So you're going to meet people and you're going to be human. I'm a human being. I'm just like you. The same problems you have, I have as a human being. And then, you know, you're going to date somebody and you're going to have these issues, and somebody's going to always threaten you with it. You're going to the blogs.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that? You see that when that happened, if that has happened
multiple times
simultaneously, you get tired of giving in because you don't feel safe anymore. I can tell you, it's very hard for me to even, like, you know, lie down with the opposite sex now and just sleep, because I've had people who took pictures of me, people I loved, who took pictures of me. And how did I know they took pictures of me? We had a problem. Then they send it to you and be like, I've sent it to the blogs. And this is somebody who used to say, I love you. So these are the experiences that people in my position go through. So it's not that I enjoy being single. I'm a lover. I'm a send flowers, sing you lullabies. I'm that guy. All right. But lately, I don't feel like doing all that again, because I also have to protect, you know, my peace of mind.
You've experienced the full arc of being an Afrobeats artist, right? And not just an Afrobeats, just an artist, a music artist in general. What would you say it takes to survive this long in this industry, especially the music industry? Because 17 years is a long time, right? And I think even when we spoke to MI, it was the whole idea of, like, longevity. Like, it's not about how you start or how you came. How do you plan on being here for 10, 15, 20 years or even more? What would you say it takes to survive?
Good people. Good team. You're as good as your team. Everybody winning now has a good team, has a good manager, has a, you know, and it's, you know, people always put the money first. You know, there are going to be times when there's no money. Can your manager, is your manager still going to believe in you? When there's no money, is your manager going to say, oh, there's no money, that's it for you? That's it for us? Or is your manager going to say, we have to figure out ways to make money? So it's good people, it's a good team. You understand? For you to be able to be around for the longest. I've had people call me content creator. Yeah, I've had people call me upcoming. Yeah. You know why? Because I've been in the game for, you know, 17 years. And then you're driving by, you see me throwing my legs, doing TikTok. You're like, this guy, right? This is not, but then that's what the team says we have to do to be present. And you have to do it. Yeah. You get what I'm saying?
We created the Afropolitan podcast because we wanted to make sure we tell the stories of those who came before us and those who are coming in front of us.
Our stories deserve to be documented and remembered.
And over here at Afropolitan, our drink of choice is Inbaroche, which is a gin from South Africa, because we believe African brands are global. So Eche, what are you toasting to?
To our builders, our innovators, to show that Black brilliance exists worldwide.
I am toasting to African creativity. I feel like the world is just blossoming with beautiful African storytellers.
Here's to legacy.
And stories worth sharing.
So babes, I'm always talking to you about investing. How's your journey going so far?
It started because you've been on my head for the past 6 months about investing, and you'll be proud of me because I actually found an app I love. It's called RiseVest. And actually what I love about it is that you can start with $10 and it automates everything for you. So literally I just go to the app and literally it's investing for me every single day.
Yeah, because we know you're not going to be a trader anytime soon. But with RiseVest, you're going to be able to invest in US stocks, right? Fixed income, real estate, etc. Right. And so I'm happy you're finally on board.
And you know, the funny thing too is I always tell my girls that as women, we're not investing enough, we're not talking about it, and we're not having these conversations. So I shared it in all my group chats. So you can find RiseVest on the Apple and Google Play Store.
Okay. Make sure to use code Afropolitan so that they know that we sent you. You know how every week we sit down with people who've done it, people who've built, people who've led movements, people who've created culture. What if you could do more than just listen to them? That is why we built Convo by Afropolitan. On Convo, you're able to book one-on-one video calls with in-demand experts from Africa and the diaspora. Go to convo.vip to get access to your next mentor, because sometimes one convo can change your entire path. I think we're going to switch to a rapid fire segment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's where we ask you a question and the first thought that comes into your mind, you just respond with, right? What's your favorite Nigerian food?
Soup, swallow.
Which swallow though? Because Calabar.
Fisherman soup.
Fisherman soup. Not Afang.
No. Calabar fisherman soup.
Fisherman soup. Okay.
Yeah. Try it. I recommend it. Try it.
Fisherman soup.
Where can we get it here?
I'll send you guys a plate.
Okay.
I'll send you guys a plate.
Oh, okay.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'll send you guys a plate.
I appreciate it.
I'll send you guys a plate.
One lesson Calabar taught you that no label could.
You can love, you can be loving. That's what Calabar taught me. You can be a loving person, regardless of whatever you're going through. You can still be happy with yourself and people.
Mm-hmm. Song that you wish you wrote.
A song I wish I wrote. Nigerian, anyone at all.
Any song at all.
Oh man, that's a tough one.
Maybe there's a few.
A few. Pretty Wings, Maxwell.
Oh, wow. I love that song. I love that song.
Pretty Wings by Maxwell. Back at One, Brian McKnight.
Okay, I like it.
Good Girls, Joe.
Mm.
African Queen, Two Face.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that. That's one of my favorite songs. Style Plus, Imagine That.
Oh,
yeah, Imagine That, man.
Yeah, I like that song too.
Is there a ritual that you do before you perform?
Oh, yeah, a couple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do, Cheryl?
You think I can share everything?
Can a man not have secrets?
Isn't there one that you can share?
Well, I know I take a couple of shots real fast. Like back to back, like 3, 4, 5. Back, let's go. Yeah.
Well, what was the craziest purchase you made in that like 2013 to 2015 period when Kukere was blowing? Like, what's the craziest purchase you made that you're like, when you look back now, you're like, man, like the most impulsive purchase?
Bro, I think it was cars.
Yeah.
It was just cars. Yeah. Mostly the cars. Yeah.
Okay. So we ask every guest who comes to the show this question.
Yeah.
Who is somebody whose story needs to be told? Who would you love to see on the Afropolitan podcast? And it could be anyone in the world.
And you're going to bring the person.
Yeah, we'll bring the person.
We always do.
Who recommended me?
I personally want to
it's tough. Dumodu Black.
Dumodu Black. Okay.
Okay.
Awesome.
We can make that happen.
Yeah. You know why? Because he's one of those guys that the way he came up is just like I really want to know.
The story,
You know, how it was in Abuja before, because he's doing very well. So I'd like to just like know.
Okay.
Yeah, because every time I go to, we talk, I go to his page, I always look at him like, how did this guy even, do it because his sound is his sound.
His voice, we had
to get used to it, you know, and he made sure we got used to it. So I just want to know, Odumodu Black is one person, and then respectfully, Simi.
Mm.
Yeah, respectfully, awesome. Yeah.
Definitely. Mm. Okay.
Like that.
Yeah,
thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.